Hello and welcome to this edition of Diabetic Health. I'm Eileen Byrne and I'll be reading to you today from Diabetic Living, the Fall 2019 edition, as well as an article from Arthritis Today. That's the July-August 2019 edition. We'll start off with an item from the Diabetic Living magazine, their Inspire section under Real Life, Moving Forward. Being an athlete with diabetes doesn't have to mean sacrificing health for performance. And this is by Svati Christian Narula. My middle school PE teachers made us run a timed mile every few weeks in the fall and spring, as PE teachers do. The fun run was supposed to be a surprise, so kids couldn't cut class to avoid it. But because I had type 1 diabetes, one teacher would always come find me those mornings, interrupting my second period class to whisper, "Fun run," so I knew to eat an extra snack before PE. The fun run was the only thing I was ever good at in PE, and being good at it made me feel tougher than my classmates. The teachers were clearly impressed that I could run without making diabetes-related excuses or passing out from low blood sugar, which they were so worried about that they always handed me a can of Coca-Cola at the finish line. At the end of eighth grade, when my best mile time was 6 minutes 41 seconds, they encouraged me to join the high school cross-country team, where I was quickly put on the varsity squad. Being a varsity athlete was a big deal to me. Running became the first and last thing I thought of every day, more important and nerve-wracking than any science test or English paper or adolescent relationship. It was the hardest thing I had ever done, and also the thing that made me most proud. It was how I defined myself for the next 4 years. Running was hard because it sent my blood sugars on wild roller coasters with pre-race highs and midnight lows. Thank you, Mom, for all the times you saved me with orange juice and crackers at 2 a.m. I could never focus during my six-period classes because I was always fretting about my blood sugar an hour ahead of team practice. Sometimes I did 4 or 5 finger pricks during that hour, trying to figure out where my blood sugar was headed, trying to get it in the right place for a 5-mile run or 45 minutes of sprints on the track. My A1C during these years was embarrassing because of all the times I let my blood sugars float too high before running, always afraid of hypoglycemia slowing me down. I figured that the only way to control my blood sugar was to quit on the sport. In the spring of 2009, I did, opting out of my last high school track season. I was tired. But that summer, I met a series of other people with type 1 who got me moving again. First, there was Sebastian Sasseville, who had summited Mount Everest in 2008 and was getting ready for his first Ironman triathlon. He would be racing alongside 10 other people with diabetes, all members of a new triathlon club for PWDs called Triabetes. I started thinking I could do a triathlon too. It sounded special to do it as part of the Triabetes Club, exchanging updates with other members during my training and wearing a Triabetes singlet during my race. Indeed, as I trained for my first short-distance try, I felt special. This was a new challenge where I focused more on having good blood sugars during my race than on racing fast. In high school, I had raced despite diabetes. Now I was racing because of diabetes, motivated by belonging to the Triabetes Club and sharing an experience with other PWDs across the country. The other members of Triabetes taught me that you don't have to experience roller coaster blood sugars to participate in endurance sports, that if you do it right, the sport can actually make your blood sugars better. It was so different from my attitude in high school, when I thought that bouncing between crazy highs and severe lows was just the price I had to pay for running. An offshoot of the Triabetes Club organized wilderness backpacking trips, another focused on training for half marathons and marathons. I became active in both, which led to backpacking trips in Yosemite and Montana, my first half marathon in 2010, and my first marathon in 2012. Backpacking wasn't hard or scary because I was doing it with and for my friends with diabetes. Running was still hard, but I had my friends with diabetes to talk to about my training, and somehow that made it easier. I was running for them as much as for myself. When some coworkers invited me to run an ultra marathon in Wyoming in 2018, I thought of my diabetes friends who ran ultra marathons, and I knew I could run one too. This race, a 32-mile slog on muddy trails, was the most fun experience I've had as a runner. I wouldn't have become a runner without those timed miles in middle school PE class, where the teachers gave me extra encouragement because of my diabetes. And I wouldn't have stayed a runner without finding a community of endurance athletes united by diabetes. Now I know I'll always be a runner who is motivated by diabetes, and this makes every step along the way feel like a little victory. Continuing with an Inspire article, I did it, rising to the challenge. After a series of health issues, April Lawrence decided it was time for a major change. This is by Lambeth Hochwald. After Hurricane Katrina, everything changed for April Lawrence. It was 2005, and she and her family had just moved to Atlanta from New Orleans. Quote, "I was existing in total survival mode," unquote, says Lawrence, who escaped the storm with her mother, grandmother, and 11 other family members, all piled into two cars. Quote, "I was an emotional wreck and was emotionally eating. It seemed like meals were the main ways our family connected. We were surrounded by food all the time," unquote. Soon after the move, Lawrence developed a yeast infection. She also felt tired and lethargic all the time, so she made an appointment with her grandmother's doctor. Quote, "I had blood work, and before I could leave, my doctor told me to meet him across the street at the hospital," unquote, says Lawrence, 40, who works in healthcare and still lives in Atlanta. It turned out that her potassium levels were low, and her blood sugar measured a high of 405 milligrams per deciliter. Quote, "I had never been hospitalized before. I found out I had diabetes when a nutritionist came into my room, told me the news, and explained that I would need to fill in insulin prescription," unquote, she says. After a 5-day hospital stay, Lawrence left without any real sense of how to manage her diabetes. Quote, "It was, here's the pamphlet, get the medicine, learn how to do the insulin injections, and there you go," unquote, she says. She spent the next few months winging it. Quote, "I was confused," unquote, she says. Quote, "I was literally feeling my way around. For example, people would say, don't eat two slices of cake, have a little. Even with the insulin, it was hit or miss. I wasn't taking it all the time," unquote. A year later, after her yearly physical, she was again admitted to the hospital due to high blood sugar levels. Over the next 4 years, Lawrence continued to struggle with managing her diabetes and her weight. She tried every fad diet that she could think of, but her blood sugar levels kept zigzagging. What helped her break the cycle was a challenge. In January 2010, when she started dating her then-boyfriend, they challenged each other to lose 10 pounds in a month. Quote, "I'm very competitive, so I made it a goal to beat him," unquote, she says with a laugh. She tried a lower-carb diet that cut out processed foods, favoring safe foods like fruits, vegetables, and other unprocessed foods that she cooked herself. That included scrambled eggs and Canadian bacon for breakfast, tuna fish for lunch, and chicken, broccoli, and cheese for dinner. Quote, "I tweaked everything so that it would taste good and not affect my sugar levels as much," unquote, she says. By May of that year, she had lost 25 pounds. But when she became pregnant, her health worries returned. During her second trimester, she had parathyroid surgery because her calcium levels were high. She was put on bed rest before delivering at 37 weeks. Managing her health was challenging as a single mom, especially when she enrolled in night school for healthcare management while working full-time. She found that she didn't have the time to work out or eat right and was losing and gaining weight within a 5-pound window. In 2017, she started experiencing sleep apnea. Then, after an incident at work when she felt like her heart was skipping a beat, she was sent back to the hospital for an overnight evaluation to make sure she wasn't having a heart attack. She knew something had to change. Quote, "I decided to have bariatric surgery and began calling surgeons myself," unquote, she says. While her primary care doctor wasn't initially supportive, she was determined to have the procedure. In December 2017, she had the surgery. By April 2018, she no longer needed her diabetes medication, and by September 2018, she had lost 85 pounds. She credits the surgery for teaching her discipline. Quote, "When you're winging diabetes on your own, you can adjust your rules for how you feel that day. The surgery gave me more structure and forced me to follow the rules. There is no choice," unquote. Still, Lawrence is quick to point out that bariatric surgery isn't without its challenges. Quote, "The surgery wasn't a magic pill. I tell people that this is an everyday struggle. I have to work at eating right and exercising every day," unquote, she says. These days, Lawrence is vigilant about what she eats and how often she exercises. She becomes a big believer in meal prep and spends part of every Sunday sketching out her food for the week. And she now considers exercise to be fun, especially if it involves her daughter, who's now 8. Quote, "I love being active with her, whether it's taking walks with her on the trails behind the house or walking with her while she rides her bike. She's my little motivator," unquote. Lawrence has also become an advocate for staying healthy. Quote, "I tell people to make this their journey. You can't go by what someone else does, but instead you need to make your own path," unquote, she says. "And you take it one day at a time." Switching to our Arthritis Today magazine, I have an article here called "Let Go of Loneliness." If arthritis has you feeling isolated, reach out and make connections for your health's sake. This is by Timothy Grower. There was a time when Nancy Sears wouldn't have missed the annual trip to Dallas with her girlfriends. Quote, "We'd stay in a hotel, laugh, watch TVs and movies, and shop," unquote. "We would just have a good time," she says. She's 65, of Oklahoma City. But then she developed rheumatoid arthritis, or RA, which left her limping on swollen, aching knees and battling constant fatigue. From then on, Nancy stayed behind, despite her friends' pleas that she take along an ice pack and soldier on. That was 20 years ago, shortly after Nancy was diagnosed. Since then, she's missed countless weddings and birthday parties and given up attending monthly luncheons with a Christian women's group. She couldn't imagine slipping her swollen feet into dress shoes, much less standing for more than a few minutes. Quote, "You end up very isolated. You feel like the world is going on without you because you have stepped off," unquote, she says. Debbie Dombo knows the feeling. Quote, "I used to be an outgoing, vivacious person," unquote, says Debbie, 53, of Monroe, North Carolina, who has osteoarthritis, or OA, ankylosing spondylosis, and fibromyalgia. Quote, "Now I'm a homebody. I have lost my old self, and that makes me really sad," unquote. My old self, developing arthritis may make you feel as though you've had two lives, one before arthritis and one after, and that new life with arthritis can be lonely. Pain, joint damage, and withering fatigue can limit your mobility and drain your desire to do anything besides sink into a soft sofa, not exactly a formula for an active social life. Older people with arthritis, whose spouses and friends have passed away, may be especially vulnerable to loneliness, but coping with arthritis at any age can leave you feeling detached from family members and friends who can't comprehend your disease. Quote, "It's hard to date," unquote, says Kathy Wooten, 54, who has RA and lives in Rotterdam, New York. Quote, A lot of people don't understand what RA is. I had one person ask, "Can you catch it?" Unquote. Doctors who treat joint diseases can attest that loneliness is a common problem among their patients. Quote, "Many people with rheumatic diseases feel detached and like they don't belong," unquote, says rheumatologist Ronan Marmer, MD and PhD of CareMount Medical in Brewster, New York. Friends and family can't see arthritis, so some may question whether your symptoms are really so bad, or they may suggest cures they've heard of. This skepticism or lack of understanding feeds into feelings of loneliness, which, quote, "often interferes with how well a patient manages the disease," unquote, says Dr. Marmer. Chronic loneliness and isolation can lead to serious mental as well as physical health risks. Yet research also shows that maintaining friendships and staying connected to others can have critically important health benefits that can safeguard you from these dangers. The threat of solitude. Having a little alone time now and then can help recharge your batteries, but most of us don't like spending too much time on our own. Blame evolution. Traveling in a pack instead of going solo made early humans less likely to become dinner for a predatory beast, says Emily Lindsay, PhD, a psychologist at the University of Pittsburgh, who is studying loneliness and ways to overcome it. Quote, "We are social creatures and we need each other to survive," unquote. The flip side is that our brains are hardwired to perceive being alone for too long as a threat, she adds, which is why she and other psychologists consider loneliness a form of stress. Being alone can cause loneliness, but there's a difference between the two. After all, it's possible to feel desperately alone when you're surrounded by others if you don't feel a close bond with anyone. And some people have minimal contact with other people and say that suits them just fine. Nonetheless, research suggests that having frequent FaceTime appears to have health benefits. People who shun social opportunities deprive themselves of those benefits. Some experts compare lonely feelings to physical cues such as thirst or hunger, which prod you to drink or eat. Quote, "It's an inner feeling that something is wrong, something's not right," unquote, says Asha Sahajan, MD, medical director of community health at Beaumont Hospital, Grosse Pointe, Michigan. Dr. Shahan thinks of loneliness as a vital sign, like blood pressure or body temperature, and screens for it when she examines patients. When she suspects a patient is experiencing loneliness, Dr. Shahan, who teaches a popular wellness course that highlights the perils of loneliness, often suggests volunteer work, then follows up to see if it has helped. Health implications. Some public health experts say loneliness is a major public health threat on par with smoking and obesity. Stacks of studies show that loneliness often goes hand in hand with depression, anxiety, and even thoughts of suicide. Research suggests loneliness is linked to an increased risk of cardiovascular disease and many other conditions, from the common cold to dementia. On the flip side of the coin, having many social interactions appears to promote long life and good health overall, including less risk of high blood pressure or high levels of inflammation, which is at the core of inflammatory forms of arthritis. Why might lonely people be more likely to have high levels of inflammation? Again, blame evolution. If you're alone in the jungle, you're more vulnerable to attack. So your immune system churns out inflammatory chemicals to protect you against infection and promote healing in case you suffer a bite or wound, explains Mona Moeni, PhD, a postdoctoral fellow at UCLA, who studies loneliness and inflammation. Furthermore, Moeni and colleagues have uncovered evidence that inflammation may actually promote loneliness by sending signals to your brain that make you less inclined to engage with other people. In a 2019 study in the journal Neuropsychopharmacology, they found that infecting volunteers with bacteria to set off an inflammatory response in their bodies made participants feel more socially disconnected and depressed. Quote, "We particularly saw this in women, which is interesting," says Moeni, noting that women are more at risk than men for developing inflammatory diseases such as RA, which she has had since she was 14. Her work is still preliminary, but suggests a vicious cycle. Loneliness may worsen arthritis symptoms by driving inflammation. In turn, inflammation may make you want to hole up and hide from the world. Loneliness remedies. But there is good news. Early research suggests that overcoming loneliness might tamp down inflammation. Moeni and her colleagues recently completed a study, not yet published, in which lonely older people were asked to write advice and share life wisdom with younger people. Afterward, lab tests shows that genes that control production of inflammatory chemicals were less active. Quote, "There is at least some evidence that making people feel more connected can bring down inflammation," unquote, says Moeni. Other researchers are exploring ways to beat loneliness. When Laurie Thieck, PhD, a nurse practitioner and professor at West Virginia School of Medicine, realized patients with well-controlled medical conditions made frequent office visits simply to have someone to talk to, she developed a course called Listen for Loneliness. The 5-part course uses writing and in-person group discussion to help participants overcome feelings of social detachment. In a 2016 study published in the International Journal of Nursing Scientists, Thieck and colleagues reported that people felt less lonely and spent more time with others as a result of taking the class. Their blood pressure dropped too. Lonely people in a comparison group, which also met in person but did not discuss issues around loneliness, said their quality of life worsened. Thieck hopes eventually to make the Listen program widely available, but says these basic steps can help relieve loneliness. Quote, "Think about a time in your life when you felt like you were loved and you belonged," unquote, she says. Quote, "And work to get that back," unquote. For instance, one lonely woman had counseled abused women earlier in her life, so she joined an online support group for abused women. A man who felt abandoned by his children used his business experience to mentor the young manager of his apartment building. Lindsay is exploring a counterintuitive approach to relieving loneliness, the solitary practice of mindfulness meditation. In a study published in January in PNAS, people who reported often feeling lonely were given a smartphone app that guided them through 20-minute daily meditations designed to help them focus on the present and be more accepting of negative feelings, such as loneliness. After 2 weeks, their loneliness levels dropped 22% on average compared to those who used different apps, and they reported more contact with others. The app, which is available at ebmforstress.com, helped users develop a sense of calm in the face of adversity, which made spending time alone, quote, "lose its power and become less distressing," unquote, says Lindsay. People who have arthritis periodically find themselves cut off from the world due to their health, and many often find their own solutions. For example, Kathy Wooten was home in solitude for weeks this spring, recovering from complications related to multiple myeloma treatment. She was looking forward to collaborating with fellow RA patients in her work as an ambassador for the Arthritis Foundation. Quote, "I think being around positive people really does rejuvenate you, and being around others with RA helps. You can be yourself without being questioned," unquote, she says. Charles Gay of Harper Woods, Michigan, was housebound for months after double knee replacements, but as soon as he felt mobile, Charles, 75, started attending lectures and bingo nights with his wife, enrolled in a beginner Spanish class, and took Dr. Shahan's wellness course. Quote, "You've got to get out," unquote, he says. And since a new medication regimen has Nancy Sears, RA, under better control, she has more energy and strength. Her daughter-in-law recently persuaded her to volunteer at a skating party for kids with arthritis. Quote, "It was a big deal for me. It made me feel like I'm not alone," she says. For this next article, you may want to have a recording device nearby so that you can record the article, because with it comes an exercise for relaxation. And our final article today, See the Sunrise. This is from Diabetic Living. Visualizing the colors of a sunrise can bring peace and calm any time of day. This is by Rachel Zinman. Think about how it feels when you watch a sunrise. The air is still misty, the grass is wet, and the earth begins to wake. Blue, rose, and gold colors expand across the sky. You might feel vibrant, awake, invigorated. Most people aren't able to catch the sunrise every morning, but everyone has the ability to visualize one at any time of day. Doing so can help remind yourself of the vitality and peace that is ever available. This breath balancing technique uses the colors of the sunrise to relax your mind and energize your body. I'm going to read all the steps so that you can begin this practice yourself. Then, rest in a comfortable seated position and you can give this a try yourself. Close your eyes and focus on your breath. Turn your attention inward and pay attention to your breath expanding through your chest as you inhale and exhale through your nose. Allow your inhalations and exhalations to extend to a length that feels comfortable. On an inhale, imagine that you are breathing in a blue sky-colored light that washes through your body from your toes all the way to the crown of your head. Pause and drop your chin slightly, as if you were holding an orange under it, and visualize a pink rose mist swirling into every cell of your body. When you're ready, breathe out and imagine a golden light surrounding your entire body. Repeat the visualization as you continue to breathe in and out through your nose. Continue for as long as comfortable, working to match the length of your inhalations with the length of your exhalations. When you're ready, gently open your eyes and move along with your day.